right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Kings and Freaks podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Dean Sweetman. Dean, how are you, sir?
Mate, good. Incredible.
You know, folks just keep signing on to Live Golf. I saw yesterday Bubba Watson. Yeah. Bubba Watson maybe next.
Yeah. Well, the tournament starts tomorrow. Pro-Am's today. And, you know, it's the whole forget, like, I read this article today. It's like, forget Coke and Pepsi, you know, Samsung and Apple. Yeah. Like, this is it globally right now. This is the biggest thing going as far as rivalry and business.
Yep.
And these are businesses, right? They're the PGA operates as a nonprofit, like the NFL does too, I think. But
yeah, just weird. Nonprofit that pays the
CEO $8 million a year.
$6 million a year. Right. Whatever it was. Yeah. I think, what's his name? Goodell's last year. $36 million as a nonprofit CEO.
That's a good term for him. So anyway, yeah, Live Golf's awesome. I can't wait to watch it.
I meant to text you because I saw this tweet. I follow like the Live Golf update.
Oh yeah, same
account. And they're giving equity ownership to the captains of each team.
So here's what they're trying to do.
So genius.
10 years ago, the IPL was born. Mm-hmm. And it's an Indian cricket league of 20 over cricket. It's short form cricket, super exciting. Those franchises today of those teams are worth billions of dollars. So Greg Norman, Australian, understands cricket, watches what's gone on in cricket in the last 10 years. He's like, I'm going to bring that to golf. Team, like, so these will become franchises. Mm-hmm. And these team captains are going to have ownership. And then they're going to get corporate people to come in. Like, I saw Adidas is going to come in, Adidas is going to come in, right, with DJ. So, like, this is blowing up every aspect of traditional golf, and I absolutely love it.
So my father-in-law was in town this last week, and he's like the opposite. Like,
yeah, I don't know, there's two camps.
Boycott. He's a traditionalist, right? And I just love poking the bear with him.
Oh yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, everyone's sponsorships are leaving them," and I'm like, "No, they're not."
Yep. Yeah.
And it was great. Yeah, it's so cool.
My buddies at the golf club are split. Work. Like, there, it's 50-50 around here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm on the range and, you know, and I'm like, hey, man, you know, what do you think about Lib? And then, like, some of the younger guys are like, man, it's awesome. This is great.
So, yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. The traditionalists are not about it, but they're not going to have much of a choice, I don't think.
No, it's good.
I don't think that it's.
Well, they're going to have to come together at some point and share this and that. And it's going to be, fun to watch.
Yeah. So, okay, an interesting thing happened a couple days ago. Today's July 28th, so by the time people are listening to this, will be early next week. But let's see here. The Instagram CEO comes out with this video. So I guess some backstory here. Obviously, Instagram has changed a bunch, right? Especially over the last couple of years. Yep. They've totally had to try and compete with TikTok. So it's become primarily video and reels.
Which I noticed. I'm not an avid Instagram person. But, you know, I use it. I post every now and again. And I'm like, man, this is becoming like TikTok. Why are they moving away from like photos?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're incentivizing reels. You know, like if you post a reel, it you may have, like, our Vast account has like 1,500 followers maybe. And we'll post a reel and it'll get 10,000 views.
Right. Amazing.
And it's like, I don't know where this
Where's that coming from?
I don't know where this is coming from, but they're incentivizing it. But what it's doing is it's messing up all the people who have built their businesses on Instagram and who Instagram has partnered with over the years to keep them on their platform.
Kylie Jenner is like up and down.
So the Kardashians did a post where they were basically like, bring back Instagram, bring back the real Instagram. So the CEO does a video, which... He posted Instagram and then posted to Twitter, which is hilarious. Yeah. And he basically just said, hey, I know that you guys want this. And then the way he said it was, we're going to continue to support photos, which is just such a hilarious way to respond to all of the people who want photos. But basically, he's saying, this is the direction we're going. Our data tells us users like video more. They're sharing more videos in the DMs. They're posting more videos. So, like, you know, we're going to keep the legacy photo thing going. Yeah. But sorry if you don't like it, video is the future.
Well, there's two things causing this. One, Meta, which owns Facebook and Insta, is under pressure. They just missed earnings today. First quarter-on-quarter growth, first time.
Wow.
They're shifting everything to the metaverse. That's a big bet. That's a multi-billion dollar gamble. And they can, and the second thing is they're getting hammered by TikTok, who are just crushing.
Right.
And then the third thing is they got hammered by Apple. Estimated loss of revenue from the Apple privacy change, $10 billion in 1 year.
Oh my gosh.
So
break that down. Can you break down even just like in layman's terms what that did? Because I
that
know
was that, such a power
that
move.
Was a huge thing for Facebook.
Yeah, by Tim Cook. Like to basically, and all it did, by the way, is allow the user to opt in or opt out of advertising, right, on platforms.
Yes.
Facebook and others. And that was such a power move because they're like, we're the kings of privacy, we're going to, you know, give you the you know, the keys to your digital kingdom. And they can you imagine losing $10 billion in profit from having like a competitor in a sense, not a competitor, but
basically just flip
the switch on you. Right. And that's the power of platforms. Like, you know, like Google do it. Like Google changed their algorithm. You wouldn't believe how much money we spend on making sure all of our search terms are performing at optimum level. In our business, it's like, we spend all this money, not just on ads, but to make sure the ads work because the algorithms are changing all the time and that search terms are ranking differently all the time. It's a whole science. SEO is a whole industry. But man, what a power move from Apple. So, you know, Zuck's in bad shape. So my gut is they should have stuck with photos because that's what got them there. And they just sort of tweaked stuff.
Yep.
And, but I think they're going to hurt their platform but you know, having said that, they do tend to copy and do pretty well. When other people
do stuff, right.
So.
Well, that was going to be my question too, is like, so these people that are, I guess maybe what they're thinking is, okay, so these people that have built these massive platforms on Instagram, they're not going to leave Instagram.
Because I bet you they're on TikTok too.
They're in,
right?
Yeah, they're on TikTok. So the idea is like, that's become their main competitor. And so instead of creating
Yeah, and look, they've got people who produce all this. So to put it up on Insta and put it up on TikTok, no big deal when you're at that level. But I don't know, dude. It's turned me off Instagram. But I'm an old.
Interesting.
I just want to see the photos of my friends, kids, and that I don't see anymore. Right? That's why I used to
kind
of go on there. Anyway, fun times.
Yep. Yeah. Interesting. Oh, hey, you know what I thought about before we go to this next topic? Shout out to our friends at Ghost Dice, who are listeners of the podcast. Here's why: because in the span of the last year, they launched another product last month that's already profitable. By the way. Called the Ice Designer, but they're building they bought one of those ADU, like prefab ADUs that they're in their backyard to be there.
Which if anyone doesn't know what that is, basically LA County said, if you've got a space in your backyard, you can drop a 900 square foot house in your backyard. Go for it. And everyone's doing it.
Yep. Yes. Yes. So they had been looking up, office space, and they couldn't get any good deals. They didn't like it. And Tony said, you know what? I want to be around my family and kids. Let's just build this thing in the backyard. So they're building this thing in the backyard. He just went to his job and basically said to them, and I'll check with him to make sure we can say this publicly, but he was telling me this yesterday. He went to his job and said, look, my business is blown up. I need to, instead of just quitting, I need you to give me a month off to test whether or not I can do this full time. And so his company said, okay. So he's got the whole month of August off, and they're going to test him doing this full time, running these two products. He's been getting hit up. He got hit up by Wayfair to put the product on their site. Yeah. So it's wild. And he's literally gone every step of the way. And he was like, look, if I get to the end of the month and I think I can still do my job and keep these two products going, like, might as well just do it. So it's like such a cool, like, talk about crawl, walk, run. He is just absolutely killed it. He has people, this new product, he has people hitting him up. And he's going, you need to give me 8 weeks. I'm building an office in my backyard. And like, I got to get my supply chain set up and going. And then I'll get back to you. And so it's just such a cool shout out to the folks
Ghost Dice
at Ghost Dice. And Ghost Dice Systems, you guys are killing it. So, okay, let's do this. I found last week we talked about raising money, which I thought was good and is becoming increasingly more difficult in the environment that we're in. I actually... probably, yes, more difficult, but probably more what it's actually
Supposed to be like. Yeah, last year was saving money.
In many ways. So I came across a list of some uncommon questions that investors may ask. You know, there's obviously the tactical stuff, but I think especially when you're a young business, people are betting on you also. Like I was talking to someone the other day about potentially investing, and at the end of my whole spiel, he was like, it looks like I'm pretty much just like, I'm buying into you right now.
Especially at pre-revenue.
Yes. Yeah. So here's some good questions. I just want to run through them and actually just kind of get your thoughts on how you would answer these, right? So the first one is, what entrepreneurs do you admire and why? I think that's a great question because it's like, who do you, you know, you're going to at least semi-emulate the people that you look to, right?
Yeah, and I think you're going to tell your age a bit, right? So I think about Steve Jobs. I think about Bill Gates. I think about, you know, Sergey and the guys at Google, like, you know, I've been around and following kind of markets a long time. Mm-hmm. If you're younger, right, you're gonna know who the co-founders of Spotify are. You're gonna know, you know, like,
the big the big YouTuber and the YouTube brands they built, like Mr. Beast.
Like I don't watch Mr. Beast, but
most people don't even know who he is.
But I'd put the Collison brothers in there that started Stripe. You know, obviously those guys are just legends. So I think if you're an entrepreneur, you've been living in entrepreneur land and startups for a long time, and so you're going to have your favorites for sure. But it's probably going to be a bit connected to demographics, maybe.
Cool. So number two, how do you track trends in your market? Investors want to know that you're aware of your industry as well as where you go to find data to stay on top of industry trends, which I think is pretty cool. Yep. We talk a lot about being informed, right? So it's kind of a cool question. You'd be like, hey, what are you reading? What do you read? What do you watch? How do you know what's going on?
Yeah, just about every market vertical has some kind of industry report, right? So we have Giving USA is a big report that comes out every year. It's around giving to nonprofits, right? So that's a big part of, you know, our business. Okay. The other thing too is I think in this is that you got to know what your competitors are doing. So a little bit back to like, you know, Zuckerberg, you know, he goes and sees what's working and then he goes and does it better. Jobs on the other hand was the forefront and just invented stuff, right? But I think knowing what's going on in the marketplace with your competitors is a really smart thing to do. You don't want to be fixated on it too much because you want to focus and build your own products and go to market yourself. But keeping an eye on what's going on. And then I just think having your finger on the pulse from your customers. Right, like here, asking your customers what problems they have, just like you did the first time when you started your company to solve a specific problem. Yep. I think you got to keep on that edge, right? So our CX team are, you know, we shifted our product managers to be much more engaged with our customers in the last 18 months. Which sounds like shouldn't you have always done that? But you know, we grew so fast, we kind of could hardly do that. But you know, our product growth.
Because it would be generally like customer success person would be the main connection.
They're listening, you know, on pain points and fixing stuff. The product side of the business, the people that manage our products that we build and maintain and grow and add features, they're talking to customers more. So they're trying to hear see what the customer needs going forward so we can plan, you know, it's going to take us 6 months to bring something from design and pitch it to the team and get the, you know, how long is this going to take to build? And then the UI on the front end has got to get designed. Then the engineers got to go and do the back end. And like, it takes a bit, right? So having a real kind of connection to your customers using your product is, you know, pretty big time as well.
Yeah. Which I think is great. But number three question, can you tell me a story about a customer using your product? The best pitches are the one that open up a story about how your customer use real names and be as specific as possible. And I think that's massive. In fact, I just was listening to a podcast with Jason Calcanis, and he was talking about how that's like one question, especially in this environment. He's like, okay, give me three customers I can talk to. And he's amazed by the amount of founders that connect him with anyone. And he's like, that's red flag number one, is like, you won't let me talk to a customer.
So early days,
you know,
right, we'd have customers that, you know, start using the online giving and their giving would go up, right? So we count that. Now, fast forward, we produce 2 to 4 minute and we send a crew around like the country. In fact, I've got a guy, he's driving an RV around America with him and his family, and he's our video production guy. And he literally, we say, hey, we've got a customer in like Boise, Idaho. And he's like, okay, it's you know.
That's amazing.
Right? And they might be using a product. They might be using TextNGive, or they might be using our messaging product. We literally, and so we do these kind of promotion events a couple times a year, and we bake these stories in. So yeah, like early days have some customers who have a great experience and will be honest, and you can present to investors or whatever. But get better and better at storytelling your success and use that over and over and over again. That's the best form of advertising, man. Customers who are singing your praises.
Yeah, that's huge. Okay, number six, what will your market look like in 5 years as a result of using your product or service? Yeah. That's another great question. This is an opportunity to tell the growth of your company through, you know, sharing a compelling story, paint a picture of the future. This helps show investors that you're able to envision and think critically about how your product and your customer will evolve over time. So my initial thought to that is, and I'd love to know what you think, it's like, yeah, what's the result, but also what are some of the biggest like headwinds? Like what are some of the biggest things that could go wrong? So you as the investor at least know, I'm thinking, or you know, whoever is going, oh man, this could be a potential obstacle.
And I have an angel investment with a company and they're facing some headwinds, right? And the founder is really good. He just, every 3 months, you know, I get this update. Here's what we're facing. Here's the problems we're facing. Here's what we're doing to combat them. We cut spending. We, you know, we pushed our you know, burnout to 30 months. Here's these black swan events that could really hurt us. So, like, you got to be on the offense, right, in telling the truth to investors. Because if you get to like where you're going to run out of money, you're going to have to go back to them. And if they don't know the truth of what's going on, they're just going to cut it loose and go, this is a loss and you're dead. So, you know, communication is key on this as far as that goes. But, you know, you're also can't get bogged down in the negative too much. You got to tell the story of the TAM and the products that you're going to build and the way in which your customers current and future are going to benefit from all the things you're going to do for them. So it's a blend of both.
Yeah, that's great. All right, number eight I thought was really cool. And obviously this is, you know, for a very small amount of companies that grow and scale past being a small business. But what if 3 or 5 years down the road you think you're not the right person to continue running this company? How will you address that?
Huge.
That's a pretty big question. You know, like what happens if this thing gets too big for you?
You know, how you have to approach it is my ego going to allow me to make a bad decision about the future of this company? I should be getting someone more experienced to run this business at some point. And you have the vast chunk of your net worth locked up in this company, right? So the answer to that is a lot of CEOs have too big an ego not to bring someone in who could take this thing to the next level beyond them.
Right.
That's a thing.
Yeah. Is that a big, so like, and I've literally, all I would know is what I have read about with companies that IPO, but like a lot of times if you're preparing for an IPO and you're going to approach a bank, like, I'm guessing there's a lot of times where those people say, hey, listen, if we're going to put this IPO together, Mr. CEO or Ms. CEO is going to have to basically step aside and we're going to have to bring in a hired gun or at some point after the IPO, or like, because there are different levels of growth in which there are different skills needed for a CEO. Is that
the trend in the last 5 years is to stick with founders? Prior to that, the hired guns were the way to go. That has actually since shifted.
Yeah.
Because a lot of founders are really good CEOs, right? And so they're proving that they know and understand the product, the market, the fit, everything, the employees, all the things that go up to make a company successful. They're actually better than a hired gun. Mm. So there's been a shift away from that to, you know, founder-led businesses IPOing And you know, that's the trend today, because there's been a ton, you know, look at the Collison brothers in Stripe, right? So there's no way, like, when that company IPOs, and it will at some point, I'd be shocked if they bought in a hired CEO. Those guys are just, they've grown that business to like $100 billion business, right? It's like, why would you get rid of those guys?
Yeah.
So I think the trend is backing, founders and co-founders. And I think that's good, actually. So that's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's sometimes like something that I think about, one of my companies I really love to follow is Barstool Sports, because they're so unconventional and they never should have worked. Like, it just never should have made sense for them. But there came to a point where they were going to get bought by Penn Gaming. And I think part of the deal was David Portnoy was like, look, I like making content. Yep. I like doing what I do. And so let's find a CEO that really fits well with, and then he works really well with, they brought on a female CEO. So it's almost like, do I have the capacity?
And he's a bit irrelevant too.
You know, I think for him, it was like, exactly. He wouldn't be a great, he's not, you need someone that can at least come up later.
His kind of shtick, you know, in what he does is not really what a CEO should be doing. So like, credit to him for staying in his lane. Like, I just want to go do pizza reviews, right? And get like 80,000 views on some pizza review that I do that boosts his brand over and over, and let someone, you know, and then he can just be out doing his crazy stuff. Like, they're all, I see these, like they're watching a game and there's like beer and whiskey and like, it's just craziness. And he's in the middle of it all, right? Like, that was smart on his part for him to do what he does, because he's...
Yeah.
And let the CEO in the back office worry about the day to day.
Yeah.
Contrary to that.
Yeah.
Contrary to that.
Great. Those are just some. Yep.
Elon is CEO and chief Twitter maniac. Like, and says some crazy stuff.
Yep.
And gets hammered for it in the market when Tesla or something takes a hit, but he doesn't care. And so there's a contrast, right? Where he's like, I'm founder, I'm CEO. And I'm still going to be a little crazy sometimes. So take it or leave it.
Yeah, exactly. Man, Elon, we should do like a series of episodes with him.
Because
I just find him to be the most fascinating, fascinating human being. Even this last weekend, right? Like, this report comes out that he caused the divorce between the Google co-founder and his wife. And it's in the Wall Street Journal. And he basically responds with a photo of him and the co-founder of Google hanging out together that day. And it's like, this is completely fake. I don't know what this is. And then he responded, he said, I haven't even, I rarely get to have sex anyway. Sigh. Like,
he's having a lot of kids. So he must be doing something.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Okay, so quickly, let's do three. That was great. Those are just some of the more maybe intangible things that people need to be thinking about, so that you're not just robotic numbers, dollars, but hey, I'm a real guy or girl with a real personality, and these are the things I need to know, and people are going to ask me. So quickly, three entrepreneurial traits that I came across this week that I thought were good. Number one, thriving under pressure. You know, what separates the good from extraordinary is the ability to perform in high-pressure situations, which is things like tight deadlines, negative feedback, tense disagreements, and then the ability to, like, take every situation as
a challenge. This is,
there's an innate pressure to being an entrepreneur.
And this is where compartmentalization is critical. So you got to be able to go, this lives here, and then I get home, and I got wife and family, and you know, if you're young, you've got kids, so you got to be able to put that in there and lock it up, and then unlock it and go to battle, right? When the times are tough.
That's one thing I've learned from you a lot. Ever since I've met there, I don't think I've ever been around Dean Sweetman, whether it be in ministry or in business, where I'm like, man, he seems really stressed, or like, he seems like there's a lot.
Look, I have my moments.
Like, you do a good job of.
Yeah.
If you're in hang mode, 100%. You're hanging.
But you know what I mean? You know, it's a fine line between kind of faking it, you know, which I never want to do. But sometimes, like, the leader, if they're stressful and the troops see the general worried, right? It's like, that's not good for the troops. And so, but then You got to blend that with honestly, you know, presenting what the facts are in this moment, and kind of, you know, being real too. So it's a fine line, but you know, you everyone works kind of under pressure differently, you know.
Yeah, that's the tough part about being the leader. Everyone wants your candor and authenticity, but they also want to be steady and not shaken.
Not being so candid,
confident all the time. So you have to figure out the. Totally. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Thriving under pressure. Okay. Next. I like this one a lot. Execution over planning. The George Patton quote: "A good plan violently executed now is 100% better than a perfect plan executed next week." A great plan isn't great if it's not executed. I love that. And that's probably a trait that I've seen in people that I've
worked with. Yeah, it's an 80-20 thing, right? Plan's about 20%, execution's about 80. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not hard to get in a room with five smart people and get a plan, right? Like whether it's a short-term plan, a long-term plan, a product plan, a marketing plan, like just this is good a plan, right?
Yep.
But then the hard work is 80% is actually executing the plan. So make sure the planning is 20% and the execution is 80, and then adjust course if you need to on the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, great. And then last, instinct and guts. I thought this was great. Many times you have a fraction of a second to make a decision. If you pause, time is gone. The ability to think on your feet is an underrated skill. So the ability to make a decision.
Yeah, I think it's kind of proven psychologically. It's proven. You know, and as believers too, we have this kind of, we have access to the peace, you know, of the Holy Spirit. So if I'm having to make a fast decision with not all the facts, I'm just going to pause for a moment. Doesn't take very long. And I'm like, Holy Spirit, this is what my gut is, you know, and without getting spooky on it, right? Yep. Hearing from God, I typically don't function like that, but I want to feel a bit of peace, you know, just maybe I take 5 minutes and just go for a walk and okay, this is what I'm feeling. Benefits, pros, cons. My gut says do this, and then you do it. You can't hesitate. You can't go. Mm-hmm. Like you got to go.
Yep.
And then if you hit a wall, then you got to stop again and go. Okay, I got to turn left instead of right, and have the courage to do that too. But typically, your first gut reaction is usually the right one, right? Like there's tons of books written about that. Like.
Right.
Go with your gut. Go and look that up on Amazon. There's probably 40 books on like the first thought.
Yeah.
And I did this leadership feedback thing the other day with some of my management team, and it's like I had to give the first like thought about their performance in this or that and how I thought or how I thought they could change or how I thought they could do better. I wasn't allowed to like think about it. It was just bam. And one guy, I said, his strengths were like solid and predictable. And then my thing was like take more risks was the thing for him to work on, right? So it's kind of the first gut feeling is usually the right one. But don't
use it
if you're going from problem to problem and you're having to make. Like all these gut decisions, there's something wrong in there. That should not be how you do it on a regular basis. You should not be surprised.
Yes. That should be the outlier is when the decision's on you that you don't have a lot of great.
That should be
you just have to make a decision.
1 in 100 decisions. That should be an outlier event because if you're having to do that, that means there's something wrong with the system here. If I'm uninformed about a problem and I have to make a quick decision, why wasn't I informed? A month ago where we could sit down and work out a solution rather than me have to make a quick from the hip decision. Mm-hmm. That's usually a sign that management is not working properly, I would say.
Right. Yeah. Great. Awesome.
Fun times.
Amazing, Dean. Well, thank you as always. We will see you guys back next week. Again, as usual, hit us up with any questions, thoughts, topics you want us to talk about, and we always want to get to those. So we'll see you next week.